appreciate that everyone is here today on National Ag Day. I expected, you know, I suppose I should have brought treats. I didn't. I apologize. But we'll just, okay, so, but welcome. I know it's also, you know, there are other holidays that we can celebrate, but this is an important one today for us, and we certainly are also happy to be going through the ag policy bill today. That's what we're going to be doing, and we have some other bills on the calendar. So the first thing we have, we do have a quorum, so I'm glad to see everybody here. If Representative Brand, if you'd like to move the March 12th minutes.
Yes, Madam Chair, I would like to move the minutes from March 12th.
Thank you. Any additions or corrections? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, no. Motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. So we've got the House File 1733, and that is in your packet with the original DE2 amendment. That's what we're going to go off of, but we have not yet moved that. So originally, we moved the House File 1733 that was laid off over, and we walked through the DE amendment, Mr. Sullivan did. So now I'm going to bring back up the House File 1733 back before the committee and move the DE2 amendment. So the amendment's before us, and okay, so what we'll do is we will then speak to the additional amendments that people have, and then it will all be rolled together. So I know that people have amendments in their packets. I will find those. So as we go through, I'm going to start with Senator Brand. Give an amendment.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move Amendment A-15.
Okay, so the A-15 amendment, Representative Brand moves that amendment. So would you describe that, please?
Certainly. It's a small change to the page 21 of the policy, line 7. After contagious, I would like to insert bacterial or virological. And after operation, I'd like to insert including but not limited to African swine fever. In my particular district, over 675,000 hogs are produced. Although we're not number one in the state, that's still a lot. And with African swine fever making its rounds across the globe, I'm hopeful that we can at least adopt this language change to address that issue if it were to make its way to the United States and to Minnesota.
All right, are there any questions? So if people see the A-15 amendment, it's dealing with page 21, line 7 of the DE-2. And any? Oh, Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just wondering if there's anybody here from the pork producers who could comment on this amendment.
Thank you. Is there someone here from the pork producers that would like to comment on it? Or Representative Hamilton, do you have another comment? Did you want somebody else?
Or if there's anybody here from the Board of Animal Health.
Sure.
You just speak to the men.
Sure. Okay, someone from the Board of Animal Health, they want to come down. And then if we don't see anyone from the Board of Animal Health, we might need to go to the department. Do we have, Dr. Thompson, good. Thank you for coming down. Welcome to the committee. If you would, and hopefully you have the amendment or you know what the amendment is.
I have seen the amendment. I don't have it with me, Madam Chair.
So the Representative Hamilton just wanted you to comment, I think, on the amendment.
And Madam Chair, thank you, Representative Hansen. Representative Hamilton, members of the committee, African swine fever is at the top of the list right now for foreign animal diseases. We saw this disease, which is a highly contagious disease of pork only. It's not a human health risk. It's not a risk to other livestock species, but we've seen it explode, especially in China. Previously, it was also found in Eastern Europe and has been making its way west. And right now, our federal partners are working very hard at keeping our borders secure, and there's a lot of research going on as to how this disease is transmitted and can be transferred, but it is, like I said, very high on the list for the Board of Animal Health and all state animal health agencies.
Thank you, Dr. Thompson. And I just have a question about bacterial or virological.
It is virus.
Okay, thank you. All right. Representative Anderson?
Thanks, Madam Chair. And this may be one of these questions that I'm embarrassed to ask, but are there other types of diseases, or does that cover the whole gamut, bacterial and virological, that could infect hogs or any other kind of livestock? Are we limited to these two types, or are there other types?
Dr. Thompson.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, members of the committee, bacterial and viruses are the large portion of the diseases that we see across livestock, but of course we've had those discussions about prions too. That is another type of pathological agent.
All right, Representative Brand.
Yep, I just wanted to make a comment on this. I did vet this with the Department of Agriculture, talked to Commissioner Peterson this morning, and he was okay with this language as well.
Thank you. Any other questions? All right. Thank you, Dr. Thompson. So the A15 amendment that Representative Brand has brought forward, seeing no other discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted. I'm going to look at maybe, I believe there's an A5 amendment. Representative Anderson, is that your amendment? Do you want to speak? Okay, so you would like to move the A5 amendment, and then you could discuss it, please.
Thanks, Madam Chair. The reason for this amendment, again, I expressed concerns the other day that as industrial hemp moves forward, we want to make sure it's, I said, not the Wild West. We are hearing some amazing numbers in terms of gross profits per acre. And I realize the definition is to align state with the federal definitions. And Madam Chair, before we move further on this, could I have the Department of Ag come down and discuss how this may impact what they're doing?
Absolutely. So, Deputy Commissioner Vogel, welcome to the committee.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair. Like you said, I'm Deputy Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. My name is Andrea Bobble. So Representative Anderson, we just had some concerns about this amendment because a lot of our folks are looking to extract for CBDs. And once you do that, you can extract, the byproduct is a higher concentration of THC. And so the amendment reads that there's possession of that is unlawful, and so our aim is not to, you know, make it so that our hemp farmers are criminals, but we certainly recognize the issue and concerns that you have, and so we commit to working on that issue further to create some sort of regulatory framework to ensure that that's not sort of the Wild West.
All right. Representative Vang.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Anderson, for, you know, I see your concerns there. It's also all the agencies are working closely to make sure that, you know, that's an area that we put our consumers' safety first. However, the legal definition of hemp is already in the Farm Bill and is already in Minnesota Statute 18K Section 2 that the threshold for THC level is 0.3%. And so I would say this amendment is redundant and not necessary. So I ask members to oppose this.
All right. Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Well, I don't think it's redundant. It's just, to me, it's another step in being careful here. But with that in mind, and after talking with the Department of Ag folks in getting their assurance that they're going to work on this area, because we have to make sure it's done correctly and we don't want to make criminals out of farmers, but with their assurances, Madam Chair, I will withdraw the amendment.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. The A5 amendment is withdrawn. I'm going to look to, I believe, the A6, Representative Tabke. Your amendment?
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I would like to move A6 to be adopted to the 1733 DE2 amendment here.
Yes, please, if you'll speak to the amendment.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah, so this, we heard a lot last week about chronic wasting disease, and there's a lot of discussion around chronic wasting disease and the major implications the disease has. And the one thing that stuck out to me critically with this, and something that legislature, I believe, needs to act on, is the herd depopulation portion of it. As we sit today, there's a statute that requires depopulation. There's the work to require depopulation of swine herds, poultry herds, things like that, as a major disease is found. And after the meeting, I talked with a bunch of the Survey Day farmers, and they were also in support of the depopulation, understanding that it is really, that is critical to the future of not only the wild population of white-tailed deer in Minnesota, but also to the future of their industry. So I asked for everyone here support in the having this language in statute that allows and makes certain that as CWD is found in survey population, herd populations, that it is depopulated. So, thank you.
Questions from the committee. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, what funds are available at the state level to make amends and make these farmers whole if this were to become law?
Representative Tapke.
Thank you, Representative Anderson, Madam Chair. This is obviously in the policy bill, so this is going into the policy omnibus bill, so the funds will need to be discussed. As I understand, there are the emergency funds that are available for different things with the RFA. As we talked through, I think it was Tuesday, my days are running together with me now, with the RFA for emergency funds, and there are a variety of ways that we can do that, but the main thing that we have to have is the ability for this depopulation to happen. I believe it's critical to the industry.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks again, Madam Chair. Well, without any specific mention in here about funding to pay for this type of thing, I think this is a little bit premature in terms of not talking about the funding piece. This is going to put these folks out of business unless they're compensated. So because of that, I would speak against this amendment, Madam Chair.
All right. We have Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd also, if I could, ask the Board of Animal Health to come up and speak to this one as well. You know, we had quite a bit of testimony on this, but if we could ask the Board of Animal Health to come forward and just share with us their thoughts on it and what some of the other practices comparable are.
Dr. Thompson? Welcome to the committee again on this issue, CWD, so it's the A6 amendment. Dr. Thompson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hamilton, this is the board is not taking a position specifically as to this amendment at this time. So if there's a specific question about the program in general, I could answer for you.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Compare it to other livestock, if you will, what the general practice would be with other diseases and other livestock and various scenarios like that.
Dr. Thompson.
Right. Madam Chair, Representative Hamilton, members of the committee, if we look through some of the diseases that Minnesota has faced in recent years, or recent in my memory, 10, 15 years ago, if we go to tuberculosis in northwestern Minnesota, there was a herd buyout program basically to get some of those herds off the landscape. There was also indemnity available through the United States Department of Agriculture. More recently, with high path avian influenza in 2015, again, there was indemnity available through USDA, the United States Department of Agriculture. Importantly, because that disease was so lethal to the birds, it was important to get the people out there to run through the numbers of those birds, because USDA pays for live animals or poultry standing on the premises at that time.
Thank you.
All right, Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think that's a critical point about a herd buyout and other clauses working together, not only with the state level but the federal level as well. Like Representative Anderson said, this will put a lot of people, or could put, not a lot, but could put people out of business and their livelihood. And with that, Madam Chair, I'd ask for a roll call.
Okay, roll call has been requested. We're not yet ready to take that roll call, though. Representative Lewitt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess for the author of the amendment, I believe you just mentioned that you believe that there would be RFA funding available. Didn't we just pass an amendment that made sure that that wasn't possible?
Okay, Representative Taft.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Luke, with this, this is, again, this is policy omnibus bill, and I'm not sure what you would like to have in here for finance-wise on things, but as we continue moving forward with the finance omnibus bill, the two will work in concert, and I do not believe that this is premature or even especially within the farm survey industry, a controversial topic. This is something that we want to, that the farmers that I talk to, this is supporting agriculture, supporting this farm survey industry, and the farmers that I talk to were very much in favor of this. I completely and totally agree with yourself and Representative Hamilton that this is that there needs to be some sort of indemnity clause as it moves forward within the finance omnibus bill, but we need to make sure as responsible legislators that this is the direction that we are heading for the industry and for agriculture. It's shocking to me that this is not something that everyone supports. I get the next steps, but this piece is something that has to happen, and I think that all farmers across the state understand that as you have a highly contagious, negative, dangerous disease, that it needs to be controlled, and it just has to be, and there's no other way around that. We have to have the supports and everything in place with that as well, but in my opinion, this just has to happen, and we will absolutely work within the finance bill to make sure that people are held whole and taken care of, because we want to support our farmers no matter what type of farming they're engaged in.
Representative Lewitt?
Well, that's a lot of speculation. So do you have anything specific? I mean, it's easy to take a direct shot here at an industry without doing the full job, and that would be to look at the potential here for indemnity. And I'm very curious, do you have any testifiers here that represent all the survey industry? I mean, you mentioned that you've talked to some farmers, but you've made some pretty broad statements about all farmers. I'm assuming that's all farmers in Minnesota, and also some broad statements about everybody in that industry. So do we have a list of folks that are ready here to testify? I mean, I suspect there's quite a variation of opinion amongst the industry. I find that in the industry that I'm part of, and I believe it's even it's not unique to poultry folks don't always agree, nor to swine folks. But again, I would anticipate that there would be some real heavy hitters from the industry that would likely probably help you even do the rest of the job. And that would be speculating on what might be is just not the way we deal with farmers. There's got to be a little more thought put into that, I think, from the financial side. So where are all these folks?
I believe you're asking for somebody to testify, and so that's what I heard you say. And I know we have somebody sitting who's looking to want to have that opportunity. So that's what you've requested. Is that correct, Representative Lewick?
Exactly. And particularly, it's one thing to throw a couple sentences in here, but the second part of it is, we're better than this. We do all the work. We don't just throw one thing out there. There's a huge financial tail to this.
So welcome to the committee. We have two testifiers who want to speak on this issue. So,
Madam Chair and members, Tim Spreck speaking for the Minnesota Deer Farmers and I hate to disappoint Representative Lewick. I'm not a heavy hitter, but I'll do the best I can in this regard. So thank you to Representative Tabke, who took the time to meet with some deer farmers that I introduced him to at the last hearing. I do want to clarify the position of the organization, though. We are currently having numerous conversations, and the elk breeders as well, within both bodies as to how do we get to a mandatory a depopulation scenario. Very importantly, indemnification has to be number one. We can't single these folks out, treat them unfairly with regard to how we treat other areas within livestock, and that area has to be addressed, and I'm not comfortable moving forward today with an amendment unless that is addressed as a part of the amendment. And you know, we do finance things in policy committees or policy amendments all the time here. So we would be much more comfortable. But our most important message for the committee today is we'd like to continue the conversations as the bill moves forward. We are committed to finding a way to get to mandatory depopulation as long as we can address a couple key issues. And, you know, this is a livestock industry, yes, but it's also a little bit different than your common livestock. So we need to address some issues that the farmers have. So once again, thank you for the conversation. I do appreciate the time. Thank you.
Yes. And Mr. Quillis.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Tony Quillis, and I'm representing the Minnesota Elk Breeders Association and agree with Representative Tapke on two things. Number one, I don't know what day of the week it is either. And, Mr. Chairman, we have also, as Mr. Spreck has pointed out, had this conversation, and it's an important conversation to have about the depopulation, and we agree, and we'd like to keep that conversation going. But what's concerning is, and we talked about a little bit on the financial concerns, is as the language on 1.14, the amendment is euthanized and disposed of at the owner's expense unless state and federal funds are available. And just let me just give you one scenario real quick. The folks I represent in average herd size is 42 to 48, and because I'm really bad at math, I'm going to say the herd that we're talking about is 50. And an average animal for my folks is could range up around 5,000, but again, because I'm bad at math, I'll say that it's 50 animals at $2,000 a piece as determined by whatever agency we determine. That's $100,000 that some farmer is going to be taken from them with no indemnification, and then they're going to be responsible for also euthanizing and disposing of that herd. That's what's concerning to us. We want to make sure that funding is there. We've had some good conversations with the agency and the Board of Animal Health about it. And I'll give you one example is, and I think Representative Hansen will probably, I haven't seen his bill yet, but probably have it in there, and I know Representative Lewick has been involved in it, is the wolf deprivation account. It seems like we have to replenish that account a lot every year. Representative Hansen probably knows better than I do of how much money goes in there, or Representative Lewick, but it seems like we have to replenish that frequently. So that is a concern for us. Representative Tapke, we're willing to have that conversation, and thank you for bringing it up to talk about it, but we're concerned about whether those funds are available or not. And then, like I said, in the example for us, it would be $100,000 just for the example of that one farm, and there's no funds available. They would be out of pocket for that, and then responsible also for the euthanization and disposal of those elk.
Thank you, Mr. Quillis. All right, we have some more questions or interaction here amongst the committee. So Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, would an oral amendment be, I guess, acceptable?
I think it could be.
Okay. So because Representative Tapke, I understand what you're trying to get to, and I think we can agree on again, the end result, if you will. Well, our current concern is, you know, on the examples given by the Board of Animal Health, there have been funds available to help producers through this, right? And, you know, you said, I believe you said, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but what I heard was that you said we should have the support there for them. Mm-hmm. And so, Madam Chair, with that, what I would recommend for my oral amendment would be on lines 1.14, delete and disposed of at the owner's expense. And then on lines 1.15, after the word are, the third word in, put the word, insert the word not. And so it would read, the entire herd must be euthanized unless state and federal funds are not available for this purpose. And, Madam Chair, what I'm trying to get accomplished is that we will put our money where our mouth is, saying that, you know what, we're going to put resources, funds and resources, to address this issue. And if it's, I'm going to reword that, this is a serious issue, and therefore we should be putting all the resources, all the funds available to address it, just like we've done everything else, so whether it's avian influenza, bovine tuberculosis, et cetera. So I know that this is the policy section, and this would just hold us accountable to make sure that there were funds available in order to do this depopulation.
Thank you, Representative Hamilton. Mr. Sullivan, I'm not sure if I totally understand the amendment, so maybe I'll just start with me. So it's saying the entire herd must be euthanized unless state and federal funds are not available. It seems like it doesn't match. Like, if they should be euthanized, but if funds are not available,
then they're not.
Then they're not euthanized.
Correct.
Okay. Okay. All right. Now I get that now. So, Mr. Sullivan, does the amendment, is the oral amendment that's being proposed, is that an acceptable oral amendment?
Madam Chair and members, I think it is. I think it fits with the intent that Representative Hamilton just expressed.
Well, I know.
Like, the herd could be euthanized without state or federal funds, but there wouldn't be a requirement to euthanize unless state and federal funds were available for that purpose.
All right. And then Representative Tapke, it's your underlying amendment here. So
yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. And I appreciate, Representative Hamilton, your what you are trying to go for here and how you're trying to get there, but I think that actually takes our feet off of the fire to do that, because by having this in here, we want to have, in the finance omnibus bill, we want to have the number one goal, at least in my opinion, I'm trying to get to with this amendment, is to have depopulation happen with the protection for farmers financially. I want those two things to happen concurrently, and by the changes, at least the way I'm interpreting it, that you're making here, it does not push and force us to have the financing in the finance omnibus bill, that we can go with it or not go with it, and it completely neutralizes this amendment. And so I agree with what you're doing, but I do not like that, and would ask people to not vote for this change.
Okay,
Madam Chair.
Hamilton.
Madam Chair, no, this puts the state's feet to the fire, saying if we're going to take this seriously, as we should, then we're going to have to bring some money along to back this initiative as well. And in the event we don't, well, then the herd's not going to be euthanized. So it puts the feet to the fire, the state's feet to the fire. So I would ask for your support on this amendment.
Representative Brand, you had a comment about this.
Yes, my concern for this amendment is what happens if there's a recession and we're deciding what to cut on the table for funding, and this is one of those things, and then we have a large outbreak in one of our counties in this across the state of Minnesota. That doesn't seem like a scenario that would play out in anybody's favor with this amendment.
Representative Hamilton? Or
especially the farmers. Because you're going to put them out of business. And again, we pulled together, whether it was bovine tuberculosis, avian influenza, the state has pulled together. And so we're saying if we're going to do this, again, we should be pulling together and make sure that the DNR, the Board of Animal Health, the producers, the universities, that they have the funds and the resources available in order to do this. Right now, what we're saying is to the producer, you know what? If we don't have the funds, you're out of business. Who cares? You're out of business. Well, you know what? I care. And so we should be bringing forth, just like we've done with other herd buyouts and everything else, bring forth the money. And I think that this oral amendment is one way to do that. It's saying, state, you must come forward with the dollars, otherwise we're not going to just subject the one farmer or whatever in order to do this. So ask for your support.
Okay, thank you. And to this amendment, Representative Hansen had a comment to this amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members. I think maybe the testifiers would know, but I believe that there's $3,000 a head available from the federal government for indemnification. So there already is money available, but some of the captive deer production facilities wouldn't take it because it's $3,000 is less than what they want. So I want to be clear with this discussion. Representative Hamilton, you haven't been in the committees where there's been testimony that we're dealing with a human health issue. And I'm going to say a human health. We had testimony from the University of Minnesota and other committees. I don't know if you've watched the testimony that I asked you to do, but the testimony is we're dealing here with a potential human health issue. And the precautionary principle says that we should do what we need to protect public health. Protect public health. And so I want to be clear, we've spent millions of dollars, actually of hunter dollars. The state has stepped forward. And again, around one of the captive deer facilities, we've spent $450,000. We have had testimony in this committee where we've spent $675,000 when the deer farms have only produced $32,000 in fees to pay for the regulation of their facility. So the people of Minnesota have been stepping forward for years on this. And there is money available. I would speak against the Hamilton oral amendment, which, Madam Chair, I think is more than a one-word amendment and really is not applicable as an oral amendment, and in favor of the Tabke amendment as written to move forward with this conversation, because when the conversation's only in this committee, you're only getting some information, not all the information.
Madam Chair.
Thank you. What we're not going to do is we're not going to get back and forth. We're going to be as respectful as possible. Everyone has differing opinions and differing views and differing values and differing understanding of how the world revolves. So let's just be mindful that although we may have differences of opinion, that doesn't make that person any less valuable to the making of this committee. So I think I have Representative Anderson and Representative Lewick, but Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This testimony is surprising. And I would respectfully ask Representative Brand, what was the purpose for the amendment that you just offered and we passed?
Representative Brand.
The purpose of this amendment was to address an issue in which there's a potential for a global pandemic to reach our shores and to reach our state and to address one of the largest industries in the state.
Yes, Representative Anderson.
Madam Chair, thank you, Representative. But why did we, in effect, exclude any type of payments for a prion-caused disease?
Representative Brand.
Well, it looks like there was a passage of the change as discussed in the last committee meeting on Tuesday, and I wanted to bring back the virological and, forgive me, the other one specifically because it affects a majority of farmers in my district and a majority of farmers in southern Minnesota.
Madam Chair, I have a point of order, a confusion about order.
All right, you have a question?
As you all know, I'm new to the committee, so I'm just trying to figure out the rules about this. The Brand Amendment has been spoken to and voted on. Why are we going backwards?
Thank you for that clarifying question. I believe it has something to do with the fact that CWD is not a part of that amendment. And now we're talking about an amendment for, you know, whether or not the state would have funds to deal with that. And we did not deal with that in the last amendment.
Well, I understand that. But each author can have an amendment that has nothing to do with the next amendment. Is that correct?
Sure.
So and everybody at this table has the right. We've all seen these amendments. They've been out for more than 24 hours. We each had the right to submit an amendment to an amendment for measured discussion. I feel like we're rehaving a conversation that we had with the testifier present, Representative Herr, who is not here to defend her bill, which is part of this amendment to be included. So I'm just confused about whether we're re-debating a bill that was heard previously or if we're having a discussion about this particular amendment.
Thank you, Representative Cleburne. I think there was a question, and it's been answered, and we can now move on to the next person who has a question, who's Representative Lewis.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I was wondering if we could have someone from the Board of Animal Health come back down and speak in a little more detail about how the federal indemnity program works, what money is available. What money is available? Is there a cap on that money? How long does it take? What's the process?
I think that's a fair request. Dr. Thompson will come down and be able to provide some information about indemnification and how that works. So welcome again to the committee, Dr. Thompson.
Madam Chair, Representative Lewick, and members of the committee, we are not, the state is not intimately involved in the federal indemnity process. It is between the producer and the federal government. Having said that, there is, my understanding at this point in time, there is a limited amount of funds at the federal level for chronic wasting disease herd buyout. It is also my understanding that there is a large herd in Texas right now, large enough so that there aren't enough funds available. In addition to that, USDA uses a calculator that is out there, and I can provide a link or a copy of that calculator to this committee if that would help on a per animal basis. Again, I'm not intimately involved with that, but the process is once there is a herd, say there's a herd in Minnesota found, the owner wishes to pursue indemnity. The people that are qualified to go out and take a look at the herd and provide numbers back up through federal staff do that, and then the offer is made to that herd owner.
Thank you. Representative Lewis?
Thank you. That certainly provides some really fact-based information, particularly relative to the comments that were made about, quote, money available, just hanging out there. I would only, you might want to expound on some of the issues we had about the pecking order on money available to put down TB-infected herds that we were trying to depopulate a number of years ago. I know we experienced some significant delays that had only to do with how and when that federal money came down.
Dr. Thompson?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, representative, that's a really good question, and I'm digging back into my brain for TB days. There is a certain, and this is the federal government again. Please note that this isn't the state government that has some requirements that need to be met, a certain protocol that needs to be gone through, and depending on the type of herd, the season, the different aspects of what's going on in this specific situation, and importantly, because we're talking about the federal government, it also is important to consider what's going on across the United States, too. So that's all part and parcel of how indemnity works with the federal government.
Thank you. I think it's time for us to actually move on, because this is a really hot topic, and we did spend some time on it earlier, and we're going to spend more time on it again, I believe, in the future. But Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think it's important that we do fund this if we're asking. And so I would like to have a roll call on my amendment,
Okay. My
oral amendment, please.
All right. So we're going to go to that vote. So just as a reminder, there's an oral amendment, which was to on line 1.14 take out the words "and disposed of at the owner's expense," and on line 1.15 to put in the word "not" after "are," not available. Is that correct? Mm-hmm. Representative Tappy?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to reiterate my request that members vote no on this oral amendment. I believe that we're trying to take two avenues to get to generally the same place, and I feel that this will be very clearly addressed, or we can all vote it down in the finance omnibus bill. So we will work on it at that point. So I would appreciate everyone's no vote on this.
Thank you. This has been a learning experience for all of us as we are working through having two actual bills in this committee. In the most media pass. We've had a policy committee, and we've had a finance committee, so we've been able to kind of work our own way through on those bills. This time we actually are trying to come up with how they work together, but how are they separate as well. And so, you know, in retrospect, this might have been a better amendment just for the finance bill. Mm-hmm. So my apologies for not seeing that earlier. So I'm just going to own up to that. I'm, you know, as this amendment came forward, it made sense that it was policy, but I understand the implications of it. So, but we do have a roll call on the Hamilton amendment, and Representative Hamilton.
And Madam Chair, with that said, thank you. And if we're willing to work on this, mm-hmm. I'd be willing to withdraw my amendment if the author of the amendment would be willing to withdraw theirs as well, and bring this forth back when we're talking addressing the ag finance bill.
I would, Representative Tappy.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Hamilton. No, I'm not willing to withdraw my amendment at this time.
Okay, then I think we have two roll calls ahead of us.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. All right, so just, and I'm going to reiterate, this is not an easy topic, and no matter which way people vote on this issue, it really is not the end of the issue, and it's not. It doesn't mean that they're in one lane and not in the other lane. So just be aware of that. I was rather hoping that maybe there could have been a little bit more of a compromise reached there, but that was not reached. So we have this before us. So the clerk will take the roll, and this is Carl's first roll call here. So we're
Chair Poppy.
I'm going to vote against the oral amendment.
Vice Chair Brand?
Nay.
Representative Hamilton?
Yes.
Representative Anderson?
Yes.
Representative Eklund?
No.
Representative Hansen?
No.
Representative Keel?
Yes.
Representative Cleborn?
No.
Representative Lippert?
No.
Representative Miller?
Yes.
Representative Poston?
Yes.
Representative Tapke?
No.
Representative Vang?
No.
Representative Wazlewick?
No.
Yes, Representative Lewick.
Representative Wick?
He had you down as a yes.
Okay. Well, good.
So there was somebody over there that voted for you? I'm not sure.
Wait a minute.
It was Anderson.
But I think we have it, right? Yeah. Everybody has voted.
I didn't hear him
call your name. No, I didn't. 6, 3, 4, 5, 6, 8, 9. Okay, and a vote of 9-6. The oral amendment to the A6 amendment did not prevail. So the amendment is not adopted. Okay, so now we're back to the original. And again, I just want to make it clear that I have had some discussions with a number of people in the audience who are interested in this topic, and I am firmly committed to getting us to an answer that is satisfactory to as much as we can get to all of the parties involved in this. So just want you to be aware of that. Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Madam Chair, I know you take this very seriously, and I know you'll work towards a solution. Unfortunately, this isn't the one right here. We don't have the money to come along with it. It's not spelled out in the amendment, and therefore I need to speak out against it. And again, mm-hmm. I think we ask for a roll call.
Yes. Okay. All right, so that's clear. We have a roll call. And this is one where it's clear that we need to be thinking about the funds and how they work with this. But at this point in the policy committee, again, as I stated earlier, this might have been better just in a finance bill, but it's before us now, so we will take the vote. So if the clerk will take the roll.
Chair Poppy.
And I'm going to vote in support of the amendment.
Vice Chair Brand.
Aye.
Representative Hamilton.
No.
Representative Anderson.
No.
Representative Eklund.
Yes.
Representative Hansen.
Yes.
Representative Keel?
No.
Representative Cleburne?
Yes.
Representative Lippert?
Yes.
Representative Lewick?
Yes. I'm sorry, no.
I thought I had you there for a second.
No. Representative Miller?
No.
Representative Poston?
No.
Representative Tabke?
Yes.
Representative Vang?
Yes.
Representative Wasilek?
Yes.
Okay, in a vote of 9-6, the ayes have it, so that amendment was adopted. With much more to come on that topic and subject matter. So we are now going to turn, I think, Eklund, Representative Eklund, we didn't address yours at the beginning. You were at another committee meeting, so we're going back to the A1 amendment. Representative Eklund.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I move the H1722A1 amendment.
Okay, so the amendment is before us. If you'll describe the amendment, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. This incorporates some of the policy-related provisions from House File 1595, the Sundin Bill. All these were agreed to in House File 4133, which was vetoed last year. We can defer to the MDA for more info. Highlights of the amendment, it reduces eligible advanced biofuel production requirement from 23,750 to 1,500 MMBTU quarterly. That language is line 2.9 and 2.10. Adds oil or animal fat to eligible advanced biofuel production. Language on lines 2.25 and 2.26. Reduces the eligible advanced renewable chemical production requirement from 750,000 to 250,000 pounds quarterly. That language is on lines 3.22 and 3.25. And it's allowance of renewable chemicals to be blended with other chemicals with only the renewable percentage eligible for payment. That language is on 4.19 to 4.21. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Eklund. So it is the amendment that we have before us is the H1733A1. A clerical error maybe on that, but so that is the amendment. This came, we had Representative Sundin and Representative Backer had some bills before us. I think it was on Tuesday. So this is kind of some language from those bills. So I don't know if anybody has any questions, because probably those of us sitting around the table might not have all of the answers, but that's what we have before us. So any other discussion? Otherwise, all in favor of this amendment, say aye.
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 Any opposed, say nay. The motion prevails. That amendment is adopted. I think I'm at the A9 amendment. I believe this is Representative Hamilton has an amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This was actually brought to me. I met with a group of cattlemen here about a week or so ago, and they were concerned with the labeling of lab-produced protein being labeled as meat. And so they wanted to have this discussion and to address this at a state level. Madam Chair, since I had this amendment drafted, I have talked to the department, and the department raised some concerns to how this language, as far as the way it's written, whether or not it would accomplish what it is that we're trying to accomplish and basically do more harm than good. I also reached out to other poultry producers and other livestock entities, and I know there's a tremendous amount of discussion taking place out at the federal level, along with the USDA and the FDA also. And with that, Madam Chair, I think it would be wise to just hold off at this point in time and wait to see what the feds do with this issue. And so, Madam Chair, I'll withdraw my amendment.
Thank you, Representative Hamilton. I appreciate that. Okay, so I have before me an A14 amendment. Oh, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd move the A14 amendment.
Okay, the A14 amendment is before us. Representative Hansen, please describe the amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. We had quite a bit of discussion about preemption relating to pesticide law. When we were discussing that, I brought up the issue of delegation, which has been an existing part of statute in Minnesota law since 1987, but has not been executed. I think this is a compromise piece of provision that allows the Commissioner of Agriculture to enter into agreements with the cities of the first class and delegate specific duties under this task. If you will look under the law that has the statute that is not being changed, there's a variety of requirements relating to pesticides. This is relating to only use, application, and disposal of pesticides. So this is where the Department of Agriculture can meet and develop an agreement, just like is done with other types of delegation agreements. It provides explicit authority and criteria that the commissioner can use, and also provides a termination procedure. So I think this is a way of responding to Representative Dabney's issue and making sure that we have good enforcement and delegation of the pesticide law.
All right. Are there any questions? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a fairly significant piece. I think it was heard in environment policy, a fairly lengthy discussion. It has not been heard in this committee. And to me, it's a solution in search of a problem. And before we would do this, what cities have asked for this? First-class cities, we haven't heard from Minneapolis, St. Paul, Duluth, or Rochester. I think we should hear from them to see if they really want to take on this additional duty. Do they have the staff, the financing behind it? I would speak against this amendment.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. I will just say that I think this is permissive language. It allows the commissioner and the cities to determine if they want to do this. The cities would need to go through the process if they're going to want to enter into it. So I know that there was a great deal of heartburn over the Dabney bill that was coming for us. Some people are fully in support of that, and some people are fully in opposition to it. So in some respect, I agree this is a new language for us, but it is something that was seen as maybe more of a compromise as far as dealing with the issue. So I appreciate that Representative Anderson opposes the amendment and asks people to oppose it, but I'm looking maybe just to see if people would be interested in moving this and having this as a part of the omnibus bill as somewhat of a compromise on that other issue that we had before us. So, Representative Tapke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to speak briefly on the fact that I brought forward the A2 amendment, which is the removal of the preemption of local law, and those of us that are former chief weed inspectors here in around the table, I am an adamant and sometimes angry supporter of the fact that preemption of local law should not exist from the state level. I brought this forward on the understanding that I don't believe that the state should be preempting things that local governments absolutely have the right and should be able to regulate and do themselves. But after significant discussion with advocacy groups and different folks throughout the building, basically, the delegation was a good compromise that I was okay with moving forward with, and so it's a happy middle ground that we can all live in. And so I am not going to be putting forward my preemption of local law amendment that was brought forward by Representative Dabney on Tuesday, and in support of this the delegation language here. So I hope that everyone can support Representative Hansen's amendment.
All right. Any other questions? Yeah, Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd just like to hear from the department if they're okay with delegating their duties to the cities of the first class.
Sure. I think we'll have somebody from the Department of Ag come forward. That would be Deputy Commissioner Vauble. Welcome again.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, we do have just a couple of concerns. We're just not sure the EPA would allow us to delegate this authority. So we have some questions out to EPA right now, but we don't have a specific position on the bill or on the amendment. We just have a few concerns, and we look forward to working with the author to work those things out.
All right. Thank you. So we're not so it's not 100% in clear about that answer. But Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to the Commissioner. When can we expect a ruling from the EPA?
Deputy Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Representative Hamilton, I'm not sure. It's the federal agency, so I'm not sure when they'll get back to us. Sometimes it's soon, sometimes it could be much longer. So, but certainly we're trying to get some clarity on that.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right, thank you. Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. It's my strong opinion we shouldn't be legislating by amendment here. This is a fairly significant thing, even though it's permissive, but we're entering into an area of preemption. And I just think this needs to go through the Ag Committee process and not be done as an amendment on the fly. And and I would urge a no vote on this.
Representative Brand.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, just a little bit of clarification. What's different from the normal policy of every other thing that's in this bill? We've had a hearing, and we as a majority have had a conversation about what to include in this bill to begin with. So what's different from what you just talked about?
Representative Anderson?
Well, Madam Chair, have you heard this bill in committee before, this amendment in committee before? I'm in the Environment Policy Committee. We did hear it. But this has not been heard as a bill with testifiers in the Ag Committee before.
Just a reminder, I thought Representative or Chair Daphne was here on Tuesday to talk about this specific bill, if I'm remembering wrong.
Representative Brand, on the A14 amendment, mm-hmm. That is the Hansen amendment that is different from what the Daphne amendment or the Daphne bill was.
So technically, yes, but the major bones of this particular amendment were heard in committee.
I think that's up for discussion.
Okay.
I think that I'm not so sure that I would state it that way. Representative Anderson.
Yeah, I guess it's been a long week and a lot of committee meetings, and if I'm misspeaking, I apologize. But, so if it was in this committee,
I think my recollection was there was a brief discussion that Representative Hansen raised the delegation issue, but this amendment, as it is written, was not actually before us at that point. We did not discuss it, but we have Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I would urge support for the amendment. I think it's a compromise. There is existing since 1987 delegation law. I would encourage the department to reference that existing law. This provides clarity, and it responds to Representative Daphne and the testifiers that were there from the cities of the first class. So it is not, frankly, affecting anybody outside of the cities of the first class. And so they would have to work out an agreement with the Department of Agriculture, and that would have to be a public effort. I think it can jumpstart the discussions between the cities of the first class and the Department of Agriculture, and it does not go as far as many others wanted to go with right out preemption. It does not preempt. It does not break preemption. It has the existing authority delegated, which there's precedent for in existing law.
Thank you. Okay, so we have this amendment. It is the A14 amendment before us. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay?
No.
Motion prevails. The A14 is adopted. We are, there were other amendments, but I don't believe any other amendment is going to come before the committee at this point. So we have the DE as amended before us now. So we will have actually two votes because it's the DE as amended and then it becomes the bill, if I understand correctly. So the DE as amended, so we addressed many of those topics. And so if you have comments, and Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I would like to thank you as well as far as continuing and wanting to continue to work on the whole survey issue. Because we're not funding that in this bill, and with a couple of those amendments, I'm going to have to speak against this bill. Madam Chair, I'm going to ask for a roll call as well.
Thank you, Representative Hamilton. All right, any other? So you would like that on both the DE amendment as amended and the bill?
Yeah.
I mean,
Madam Chair, well, so we're voting on the passage of the DE. We haven't voted on the DE yet. Is that correct?
That is correct. So I think what we've got before us is the DE amendment has been amended now. Okay. So that is what it is. And then after that gets voted on, then that becomes the bill.
Yeah.
And then we'll have a second vote on okay. the bill. So you can do whichever. I just.
Madam Chair, I'm okay with a voice vote on the initial to adopt the DE as okay. amendment. And then for the final vote, I'd ask for a roll.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so the DE as amended is before us. So now I'm going to just ask for the vote. So all in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed, nay.
No.
No.
Okay, the motion prevails. The DE amendment as amended is adopted. But now the bill is before us. We've previously had public testimony, but if there is anyone who did not testify on Tuesday that wanted to comment now, otherwise we will go to this vote, and this is a roll call vote. So any further discussion by members? Representative Tapke.
Madam Chair, I just have a question. With regard to what Representative Hamilton just said, aren't there multiple provisions in the policy bill that require funding in the finance bill to come along with it? Is that completely out of order? Because we had discussions. There are finance components and policy components that balance each other out as things move forward, and things in the policy bill would not happen if there weren't finance components with that as well. So I'm just curious about that comment.
Thank you, Representative Tapke. I would say, from my understanding, that the policy is setting the policy. And, yes, finance implications probably could be a part of a policy bill with the anticipation that you're going to have paying for it in the finance bill. I think that questions certainly have been raised here, and we've had that discussion here. And like I stated, I think I probably would have done a different calculation had I maybe spent more time thinking about that, that we would have pulled everything together. I'm trying to make sure that we're going by the right, we're in the right chapter of the book, and I think we weren't necessarily completely there. So,
thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Hamilton.
And Madam Chair and Representative Tapke, the way the language was written, mm-hmm. you don't have to have a fiscal component in order to support your amendment, because it says in the event it doesn't, it'll still happen at the owner's expense. And so what I was trying to get at with the oral amendment is to take that part out of it that we object to make sure that we have the precedents set, you know, with other livestock entities to where it would have held us accountable to make sure that the funding was available. And so that's where the objection came in. And
thank you. So we have Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I think to be clear, what we're voting on in this policy bill in regard to this issue is a forced liquidation if a confirmed case is found with no assurance of compensation. I think that's what this bill says.
But there are many other things in the bill as well. There are good things in this bill.
There are good things. I'm sorry.
So it's the balance. And believe me, we will be taking this bill meeting with the Senate, and there may be provisions in this bill that will come back, and there may be provisions that will not come back. So in thinking about the longer-term strategy as well, sometimes bills do include things that maybe aren't, may not end up with us at the end of the day. So, all right, we have a roll call being asked for, so the clerk will take the roll.
Chair Poppe?
Yes. Yes.
Vice Chair Brand?
Yes.
Representative Hamilton?
No.
Representative Anderson?
No.
Representative Eklund?
Yes.
Representative Hansen?
Yes.
Representative Keel?
No.
Representative Cleburne?
Yes.
Representative Lippert?
Yes.
Representative Lewick?
No.
Representative Miller?
No.
Representative Poston?
No.
Representative Tabke?
Yes.
Representative Vang?
Yes.
Representative Wozlewick?
She's testifying in another committee.
Okay, so the vote on the motion that House File 1733 as amended be referred to the Ways and Means Committee, there were eight ayes and six nays. So the motion prevails and the bill is adopted and on its way to Ways and Means. Thank you for the discussion. I'm sure we'll have lively discussion for the next 2 weeks, and we'll keep going with this. So now we've got some bills before us. So I appreciate that people were able to take some time to do that, and I know that there will be, like I said, much more discussion about that. But we've got House File 1339, so Representative Eklund. Welcome to the committee, Representative Eklund. Your House File 1339, I know you have some testifiers as well. So if you would like to, my intention now will be to lay this over for possible inclusion in an omnibus finance bill. And if you would move your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move House File 1339 for possible inclusion in the omnibus agriculture finance bill.
Thank you. And so welcome to the committee. Please present your bill and your testifiers.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. House File 1339 funds grants to the local governments for their efforts to combat emerald ash borer. It would provide $5 million per year in grants to any local unit of government for the listed purposes, capped at $500,000 per grant. Emerald ash borer is an exotic forest pest that was first confirmed in the South St. Anthony Park neighborhood of St. Paul in 2009. The larvae of this beetle live under the bark of ash trees, and their activity kills the trees. They only attack ash trees. Minnesota has over 900 million ash trees that are at risk from these beetles, most of which are in the northern black ash forest. Currently, 17 Minnesota counties are under a quarantine due to the emerald ash borer infestation, covering all of the southeast, east central, Minnesota, Martin County, and the southern part of St. Louis County, including the city of Duluth. The current battleground against EAB is in our cities, where the work involves creating an inventory of ash trees, then developing a plan to remove and replace weak and diseased trees, possibly to treat some trees, to delay the spread of the beetle, and to properly dispose of the infected wood. This pest will become a serious problem for our forest products industry when it starts to affect the black ash in northern Minnesota. We need to work now to slow the spread of EAB and work with the forest products industry to develop forest management plans and markets for uses that ash trees that will aid in controlling the spread of the pest in our state forested areas. I have several testifiers that can add some more detail to the need for these grants and why we should put this sort of effort against a pest that we cannot completely eradicate. With that, Madam Chair, I'll turn it over to my testifiers.
Welcome to the committee, and state your name and provide your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. Thank you, Representative Eklund. I appreciate your green shirt today as well. My name is Karen Zumach. I'm the Director of Community Forestry for Tree Trust, a nonprofit based here in the Twin Cities, as well as the current president of the Minnesota Shade Tree Advisory Committee, the state's tree board. I'm here today to offer support for House File 1339, offering that cities and towns across our state are in need of this funding to help prepare for and manage Emerald Ash Borer. Ash trees throughout our state represent anywhere from 20 to 40% of the trees that stand in our parks, along our streets, and shade our homes. The Department of Natural Resources suggests that these numbers reach 3 million in the planted environment, and in natural areas, these numbers can reach over 900 million, including the ecologically critical black ash swamps of northern Minnesota. Studies have shown that by effectively managing EAB through inventory, removal of low-quality ash trees, and treatment of high-quality ash trees, communities can make the most orderly transition away from this over-reliance on one particular type of tree. Actively managing this pest where it is so we can help delay the arrival of EAB where it isn't, allowing space for the science that has come so far in the past 20 years to continue to progress in hopes of preserving those areas of our state that would be impacted in ways few totally understand. 2019 marks the 10th year since EAB was discovered in Minnesota. Apart from the initial infusion of funding that was provided in 2010, there has been little investment in managing this pest. Cities and towns are carrying the burden of these costs and transferring those costs to private homeowners through higher property taxes. EAB is a predictable disaster. We know how it impacts communities, the environment, our quality of life, and how to manage it. Studies have shown it takes two generations to restore the canopy to its pre-invasion levels, and there is no reason Minnesota should manage EAB like the states that didn't have the luxury of time that we have and the science. We can manage it differently here, and this bill helps to get that started. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, and we have some more people. Welcome to the committee, and state your name and provide your testimony.
Madam Chair, members, I am not Rachel Coyle. My name is Mike Hom. I am the director of the City of St. Paul Parks and Recreation Department. The weather we've had the last couple weeks has called Ms. Coyle to a forestry response in our community here. Some statistics for members to consider as this grant program is being contemplated and the impact it has on local jurisdictions. To date, the City of St. Paul has spent over $11 million in its community response to Emerald Ash Borer, and our estimated need for the ash trees that remain is in excess of $27 million. To date, the City of St. Paul has removed over 13,000 ash trees with over 21,000 still remaining on property. And the numbers and the financial figures that I'm represented are for public trees. Those do not include ash trees that are on private property. In the 2019 operating budget, the City of St. Paul is dedicating over $2 million toward our Emerald Ash Borer response, borne entirely by our local property taxpayers. As Representative Eklund pointed out, City of St. Paul was the initial point of discovery or ground zero for Emerald Ash Borer in the state of Minnesota. As a leader within our urban forestry community, we've worked to coordinate our response to benefit the entire region and the state. I'm proud of this response that the entire statewide forestry community has put forward. But St. Paul being first, this is clearly a regional and statewide significant issue. The City of St. Paul certainly, and I believe most if not all local government partners, would appreciate any form of state partnership and response, whether that be in reform of a wide-ranging partnership, as this bill would represent something specifically targeted to reforestation would be welcome, something specifically targeted toward the equipment or personnel that we need to enact a local response would be welcome. So I appreciate this committee and Madam Chair's consideration of this request, and the City of St. Paul testifies in support of this bill.
Thank you. And Mr. Johnson, welcome to the committee.
Sir, thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, Craig Johnson with the League of Minnesota Cities. At your first hearing this session, I warned you I would be here to talk about this again, and thank you, Madam Chair, for giving us that opportunity. The Department of Agriculture is the source that we rely on as cities and as citizens of the state to deal with new plant pests when they arrive in our state. So that's why we're here in front of your committee, and that's why you're hearing from cities today in the Ag Committee. We have had a number of presentations on this over the years in this committee, and this session we have had it in the Environment Committees in both bodies. What we're not taking the time to do today is to give you the really in-depth report that we've received on this from the Department of Agriculture, the Department of Natural Resources, and the Forest Resources Council, which really lays out, as Representative Eklund said in his comments, that where this fight is right now is in our communities. It's in our cities where we have high-density ash populations because that's what we planted to replace elm trees when they all died of a disease. We've found out since then that we maybe should have a more diverse urban forest if we want to be healthier that way. But that's the situation we're in. And the important thing that we are trying to do with this and why these grants are needed is because we have to slow this pest. We can't let it go racing through at the speed it did in Michigan where they lost every ash tree in a matter of years. We need to slow it down, and we need to do that methodically and carefully and using the money wisely. And to do that, we're going to need the state as a partner. The communities just cannot afford to do this on their own. Some of these are communities that do not even have a forester of their own. They need the state's help to know what to do and how to do it. Every tree you remove is thousands of dollars. And it just very quickly overwhelms a community's budget. So we are here asking for that level of support to help do this. As this becomes more established, the management becomes a little different. But our goal for the next 5 to 10 years is to slow this down so that the budget impacts aren't hitting cities all at once, that we don't have to take out thousands of trees, that we can do a more methodical, planned effort to deal with this pest as it moves. It is going to continue to spread. We're not going to eradicate it, but we can do it at a pace that we can afford, and we can do it in a way that gives us time to find solutions that help with the overforest issues that are coming 10 years from now. So, Madam Chair, with that, thank you for the time, and you've got other bills on this that I'll quickly comment on. I was asked to make my comments today not only on behalf of the League of Minnesota Cities, but also on behalf of the Association of Minnesota Counties and Hennepin County, who also support this bill.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. All right, and so I think, do we have one more testifier? Mr. Huser, is that how you say your name?
Yes, please, Madam Chair.
Just identify yourself and begin your testimony.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Stephen Huser. I represent Metro Cities. Metro Cities represents cities in the 7-county metro area at the legislature and the Met Council. Metro Cities supports House File 1339 and would like to thank Representative Eklund for carrying it. Metro Cities policy supports state funding to cities to address local costs created by the EAB infestation. Many communities in the metro area are faced with growing costs related to combating EAB, and state sources of funding are needed to address this issue. Thanks for the opportunity to express our support.
Thank you. Appreciate that. All right. So, Representative Eklund, you have no other witnesses. Is there anyone else in the audience who wanted to testify in support or in opposition to this bill? Seeing none, any questions from the committee members? This is Representative Brand.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To the author, Representative or Chair Eklund, just a quick question for you. In the bill 1339, it says first-class cities, and although, so that limits it to 4 cities, right? So we've got St. Paul, Minneapolis, Duluth, and Rochester. But we've had Metro Cities talk about this bill, and they don't just, you know, represent one or two cities within the metro area. They represent a lot of different cities. And so I was wondering if it would be possible at some point to maybe dial this in for other communities that might also be in the hot zone, or other communities where that expansion is. For instance, I represent St. Peter. St. Peter is in the quarantine area. If we have an outbreak, we don't have funding opportunities like this through here. Any consideration to possibly reducing the $500,000 to $250,000 and bring all 4 class communities to the table?
I'll let Mr. Johnson take that.
Okay, Mr. Johnson.
Representative Brand.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative. This is a perennial problem we have with the wording required for this funding. The reference to cities of the first class here is attached to the clause park and recreation boards. So what we have is the city of Minneapolis, which has its own park and rec board. Mm-hmm. And so this is simply saying that a park and rec board in a city of the first class does qualify for grants. Other than that, it applies to every city, township, and county. So everybody is eligible, plus that one park and rec board that is independently elected.
I'm so glad to hear that. Thank you very much.
Thank you for that clarification. Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Quickly, to the testifier, the bill author on line 10 of page 1, it talks about treatment. What is a treatment for these trees, and what's used to treat them?
So that might be a technical question, Representative Eklund. Are you familiar with that answer, or would you like to bring somebody else down?
It's time for dial a friend, Madam Chair. But
I believe so. So welcome to the committee, and if you would just state your name and be able to answer that question.
Madam Chair, my name is Mike Ranikainen. I'm the Silviculture Program Coordinator with DNR Division of Forestry. Committee members, an answer to that question. There's a few treatments that are available. It's an insecticide treatment. The one that's most effective currently uses a chemical called emamectin benzoate. It's injected into the tree. It's a systemic pesticide that is a non-neonicotinoid, but is highly effective in controlling the adults and the larvae of those adults that are killing the trees.
Thank you. Representative Anderson?
What class of pesticide is that? Do you know?
It's systemic, but class.
I think it's a neonic.
I'm sorry. It's a non-neonicotinoid.
What's non-neonic?
It's non-neonic, correct.
Okay. Thank you. Thought I had, yes, Dr. Dr. Keel.
Thank you.
Yes, Representative Keel.
I always liked those titles when you didn't have to work hard for them. No. I would want to know how effective that treatment is. What is your success rate on that?
Madam Chair.
Representative Keel is the name.
My apologies. It's highly effective. The USDA has studied that, and I believe in their study they show it killed all adults that feed on the foliage, and it kills all larvae, which are really the target, that are burrowing underneath the bark of the tree. It was a 99% effective on killing larvae. So it's highly effective.
And it's Representative Keel.
Okay. I have some prior knowledge from University of Minnesota professor that didn't recommend I do that with my large amount of ash trees in my yard, because he said that I would have to do that regularly, and the guess was that it might not be all that effective. So his suggestion was I should start changing my trees, because I have 5 acres of well-lined yard with ash, and we started to do that. But that was my question, was, so it's gotten more effective. This is information I've had for.
Right. Thank you.
3 years ago.
Thank you. All right. Any other questions? All right. Thank you. So any closing comments? Representative Eklund.
Thank you for hearing the bill, Madam Chair. And as most of you have heard from me over and over in the committee, I'm very concerned about my 14,000 acres of ash trees in Coochin County, is why I'm bringing this bill.
Thank you, Representative Eklund. The bill is laid over. And we will just quickly go to Representative Hansen. He's got a very similar bill, and he's got one of the same testifiers. And then we're going to get Representative Lippert has two bills that might take a little bit more time. So we're going to ask Representative Hansen to move your bill.
I'm sure I'd move House File 395 for possible inclusion in the Ag Finance Bill.
Thank you. So go ahead with your testimony.
Madam Chair and members, you'll notice that my House file number is lower than Representative Eklund's, and he got more detailed as time went on. So my paragraph here is a blank appropriation from the General Fund to the Commissioner of Agriculture in consultation with the Forest Resources Council to try to involve the Northern Forest here as well, to have a rapid response to emerald ash borer. So this is looking at as it's starting to establish more beachheads. So I think this works well in conjunction with Representative Eklund, and as returning members of the committee know, we just need to do something here. We've got to find some way of responding. And back, just I'll go quickly to the treatment. That buys us some time, but the intent of 395 is to react quickly when we find that and provide support for that for local units of government and other entities. And I do have a testifier.
Please, welcome to the committee, Mr. Hoosier, and just again, identify yourself, provide the testimony.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, again, Steve Hoosier with Metro Cities. I'll just be brief. Metro City supports House File 395 for the reasons that we testified to earlier. Any state funding that we can get to address Emerald Ash Borer is greatly appreciated and very necessary. Thank you.
Thank you. And then Mr. Johnston, welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Craig Johnston again with the League of Minnesota Cities, and will not repeat my comments, but will tell you that this is the same issue, and we very much support this legislation. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions of committee members? Any other testifiers? Otherwise, thank you, Representative Hansen. The bill will be laid over. So now we go to House File 2202. This is Representative Lippert, Next Generation Farmer Program. And as Representative Lippert comes up, I do appreciate very much the committee members' engagement in all of our topics that we have, and I appreciate the respectful manner in which people are moving forward. And I have to apologize, Representative Miller, I did not get your name on the list. It was on the list. I missed it, and I apologize. You sought recognition earlier, and I apologize that I did not do that. So, and there may have been others as well that I might have missed, so I apologize. So if that happens again, just, you know, give me a little more of a nudge. I appreciate that. Representative Lippert, do you have a bill, a couple of bills before us, House File 2202. So, again, this one is to be laid over for possible inclusion, but if you would move your bill, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move House File 2202 for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Ag Finance Bill.
All right. And you can provide your introduction and testifiers.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. We've heard regularly from all areas of agriculture how difficult it is for beginning farmers to begin farming. Access to land is the biggest challenge among the many challenges that new farmers face. We have some great Minnesota and USDA programs for farm loans for beginning farmers, but they require experience in farming. With farm incomes being so low, it's difficult to pay wages, for a host farmer to pay wages, especially to an inexperienced person who needs to be trained. So this bill seeks to address these problems by modeling a farm internship program off of existing programs for other trades. House File 2202 establishes the Next Generation Farmer Development Program. It will provide competitive grants for aspiring farmers who have less than 5 years of experience of being employed in an agricultural role. The grants of up to $10,000 will actually go to the host farmer to help cover the cost of wages. The term of the grants is 7 months to give the aspiring farmer a season of work. The goal is to provide farm interns with hands-on experience in raising crops and livestock, managing employees, complying with regulations, managing day-to-day operations, dealing with market realities and other elements of farm operations that are important for sustaining employment or sustaining and growing a farm business. This is a sort of experience. New farmers will need to be able to apply for farm loan programs to be able to get the funds to access land in order to start a farm business as well. The bill asks for an appropriation of $250,000 for 2020 and $250,000 for 2021. With me to testify is Eric Sanderud.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Sanderud. You'll please introduce yourself and provide your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. It's really nice to be back here. My name is Eric Sanderud. I'm a hops farmer from Benton County, and I'm a founding member of the Central Minnesota Young Farmers Coalition. We worked together with you and other organizations a couple of years ago to pass the Beginning Farmer Tax Credit. This bill, 2022, we see as a component piece to continuing to build an effective system in Minnesota to advance the next generation into farm ownership and farm management. You're well aware of the looming demographic challenge in agriculture. Nationally, the average age of a farmer in America is getting closer and closer to 60, and yet the entire country added only 10,000 new farmers under the age of 30 in the previous agricultural census. And Minnesota has shown great leadership on this issue already with the passage of the Beginning Farmer Tax Credit. But the Beginning Farmer Tax Credit is part of a whole, and we see this bill as another part. Today we're here to talk about HF 2022. There's three reasons why we think this bill is good. One, it's a win-win. It's a win for existing farmers because they're able to better offer opportunities to people with better talent and attract a better workforce to their farm. It's a win for would-be farmers because they get a promise of true apprenticeship experience, a meaningful experience that actually does impact their ability to go out and get that FSA, that RFA, the Farm Service Agency, Rural Finance Authority, private bank loans, because they have that experience to show. Two, it's good for the ag workforce, which needs investment. Farmers are having a difficult time finding labor and help, especially qualified help, before revenues took a dip. And at the same time, we have nearly 33% of farmers in America are over the age of 65, and in Minnesota, we have just 3% under 30. So you can see we've got this. We're approaching a cliff, if as it were, and we need people behind. One thing I often do when I'm speaking to a group of other folks in agriculture is ask them to close their eyes and imagine who's going to take over that farm after them. And then I ask people to raise their hand, how many of them have a clear idea who's going to take over their farming operation, and it's heartbreaking how few hands go up in the room. And then finally, this is a complementary program with Beginning Farmer Tax Credit that we already passed. This is something, the Beginning Farmer Tax Credit created a financial incentive so that farmland owners could better able transition their land to the next generation. This bill is making it so that there's more people in the next generation to be ready to take that transition with that next step. That is what I have to share, and now Chris will testify.
Thank you. And as Mr. Barth comes down, Representative Miller had a question, so I'm not sure if it was to the author, to the testifiers, or
it either way, it can wait. It just takes a minute.
Do you want to ask it now, or do you want
your call?
You can ask.
Okay. Now that I took up 30 seconds of my asking one minute thing, thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Lippert. Quick comment. I like that we are talking more in the legislature about recognizing the need for qualified workers, whether it be in trades or it be in things that are non-four-year degree sort of things, although in agriculture I think you probably need a four-year degree for much of it anyway anymore. But you get the point. I think it's good. And I will tell you, Madam Chair, I love internships also. It's something I've worked on a lot because it does everything that they say. The only question that I raise, not directed, but in this, is I can tell you that if there's young people that want to get involved on the farms in my area, and it might be regional, they'll get hired. There's going to be plenty of work for them, and they're going to get paid pretty good. So this is well-intended. I'm not saying don't do it, but I just want to understand that if there's a grant program that goes into this, I don't know that it's going to affect more people wanting to do it. Maybe it'll help people focus on the fact that there's opportunities there, and the grant kind of ties that together. I can live with that, but I can tell you that in my area, there's more than enough work for people to get into agriculture.
All right, and welcome to the committee, Mr. Barth.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee, for the opportunity to talk today about this bill and for the opportunity to stop pumping water out of my basement for a little while. My wife, Ashley Thorfinson, and I are aspiring young farmers currently located in Minneapolis. We began following our farm dream a few years ago when we moved back to Minnesota, and we are both naturally risk-averse people by trade. So when we got into this journey to become farmers, we gathered as much information as we could. And across everything that we read, everything that we heard on podcasts, every farm conference that we went to, every farm that we visited, and in the Farm Beginnings Financial Management Program in which we are currently enrolled, we've heard the same thing time and time again. The best way to learn to farm and the best way to set yourself up for success in a future farm enterprise is to work on someone else's farm. So Ashley and I faced a tough decision. On the one hand, working on a farm would advance our skills and knowledge to best position ourselves for success. And also, on the other hand, Giving up our current jobs would sacrifice our ability to be able to afford land and qualify for loans to be able to farm in the future. Last season, Ashley worked on an organic diversified vegetable operation, getting healthy local vegetables into the community. She was responsible for growing, harvesting, and safely handling those vegetables, and she was paid $10 an hour, a generous wage for a first-year farmer. I, on the other hand, was not able to work on a farm. Instead, I kept my salaried job to make sure that we could provide for ourselves and have stability for our future. Taking on two seasonal farm jobs at typical farm wages simply wasn't reasonable. We've heard another thing time and time again in our farm education and as we've gathered this information. We've heard about how hard it is to manage an independent farm enterprise and how important finding and retaining good employees is. This problem is exacerbated because many times potential farmers are forced to leave farm jobs after only one season in favor of more lucrative jobs or never start farming in the first place, which leaves enterprises in the lurch and cuts short the careers of young farm employees. I believe this bill would enable those farms to attract and retain passionate employees and pay them appropriately to help position those young employees to be the next generation of Minnesota farmers. And it does so without being a burden on already financially stretched farm businesses. As Ashley and I move forward in our farm journey, we aspire to start a farm of our own at a scale that will require hiring additional employees. And an important aspect of that plan includes teaching those employees the skills they need to farm, training them to be the next generation of farmers, and paying them what they're worth. This bill enables that future to become a reality as well without contributing additional financial stress, providing a way forward for farm businesses to provide adequate wages for young farmers hoping to make a career in agriculture. Needless to say, Ashley and I are more fortunate than most. We came to this career path later than many, with more options, more life experience, and more savings. And even so, we have been unable to both take jobs to provide us with hands-on learning opportunities and best set us up for success. Most young aspiring farmers face even more challenges. Staring down financial pressure and student loans, it's no surprise that young farmers shy away from seasonal work at a low hourly wage. This bill will enable beginning farmers like them and us to build skills without sacrificing solvency, and it will create a pathway for people to learn to be farmers in a way that is serious, stable, and sustainable. Eric talked about how it's a win-win. I think it's actually a win-win-win. farmers win by being able to pay good wages to employees without further straining their businesses. The next generation of Minnesota farmers wins by seeing agriculture as a legitimate career opportunity. And Minnesota wins by continuing to lead the way when it comes to getting young people back into the farm workforce. Thank you for this time.
Thank you for the presentation. Any questions? Otherwise, Representative Lippert's just closing comments, or do you have anybody else that wants to? Oh, Representative Anderson has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wasn't quite sure we were done yet. But I applaud the idea behind the bill. But if the idea is to get better paid interns, why wouldn't the grants go to them instead of the business?
Representative Lippert.
Do you want to respond to that?
Sure.
All right. Mr. Sandberg.
Thank you. Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, hello. Ultimately, this money does end up in the apprentice's wage. The grant doesn't just go to the grant goes through the farm to the apprentice. Does that make sense?
So I would just add that this bill recognizes some of the difficult economic realities that farmers are facing and wants to make sure that farmers are supported in offering a good wage to interns. And so the support goes to the farmer for the sake of providing a good wage to the intern.
Representative Anderson.
So it's basically a pass-through then from the farm to the intern. Is that what your bill says?
Mr. Sandberg. He's nodding his head.
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay. Any other questions? Did you have any other testifiers?
No other testifiers at this time, Madam Chair.
All right. And anyone from the audience that wanted to speak on House File 2202? I don't see any. So closing comments?
I think we know how important it is to support the next generation of farmers as they're beginning farming, and that there are significant obstacles, and so I think this internship program is a significant step forward for us.
Thank you, Representative Lippert. So that bill is laid over. We now move to House File 1546. We are running close on our time. Please be aware we do have the room till 11:45. Yeah, 11:45, so it may run beyond our initial time of 11:30. So We have a number of people that have come who would like to testify on this bill. So, Representative Lippert, if you would, and this bill needs to go to the Tax Committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that House File 1546 be recommended to be referred to the Tax Committee.
Thank you. So, present your bill and provide your testifiers. They may want to come down and start sitting if you have people, but you can go ahead and get started.
Okay. So, House File 1546 is proposing improvements to the Beginning Farmer Tax Credit bill that was referenced in the previous bill presentation as well, and this was passed during the 2017 legislative session. This program was created to increase access of affordable land for young and beginning farmers in the state who do not have access to inheritable land. It provides a state property tax credit to landowners who sell or rent land or assets to a qualified beginning farmer. The program also provides a tuition credit for young and beginning farmers to take an improved farm business management course. In its first year, 2018, over 800 young and beginning farmers took advantage of the program. In order to acknowledge historical and systemic injustices, this bill allocates 20% of the funds for beginning farmers of color, women beginning farmers, and beginning farmers with disabilities. While our state's diversity is increasing, only 0.7% of land operating farmers in Minnesota are people of color. Women make up half of our population, yet only 25% of land operating farmers in Minnesota are women. These applicants would not be limited to this 20% of funds if more is needed. And if the 20% of funds are not all used by September 15th of each year, any applicant would have access to it. Additionally, this bill makes some needed technical changes to this successful program. By ensuring that young and beginning farmers who already completed an approved farm business management course in the last 10 years would be qualified for the program without having to retake the course. It removes the requirement for applicants to prove profitability potential. If aspiring farmers who may not have land yet are applying for but have not taken a farm business management course, they likely do not have the skills to prove profitability potential, particularly in the current farm economy. So we thank you for your consideration today, and I have some testifiers with me. Paku Hang of HAFA was prepared to testify on Tuesday, but she couldn't make it today, so we'll just have to imagine her enthusiasm and support for this in our midst today. But I have other testifiers as well. So.
All right. Welcome to the committee, and state your name and provide your testimony.
Madam Chairman, committee, thank you so much. My name is Andrew Hansen-Pierre. My wife and I run a vegetable farm in Schaefer, Minnesota, which is just north of Taylor's Falls. I'm here in support of this bill because my wife and I actually purchased our farm 13 months ago, and we were eligible for the initial bill. However, both of us are graduates of Land Stewardship Project's Farm Beginnings, which is a holistic business management course, which teaches us how to manage our farm through accounting, through employment. However, When that bill was passed, we were not able to utilize this tax credit because retroactively we couldn't prove that we had completed that farm business management course. And as many of you know, farming is an incredibly labor-intensive job, which in 7 months we work more than most full-time year-round employees. So we did not have the time to complete a farm business management course last year. In order to utilize that farm business tax credit. So I just wanted to say that I'm in support of this amendment or this bill, and I ask for your support as well.
Thank you, Mr. Hansen-Pierre. The next person, welcome to the committee. Please state your name and provide your testimony.
Hi, Madam Chair. My name is Rodrigo Cala. I am represent the beginning farmers of color. I working with two organizations, the Land Stewardship Project and Latino Economic Development Center. And we have a question. The average age of farmers on this country and on the state is 57 years old. So the question is, who is going to be the next generation of farmers on this country? So immigrant and farmers of color can be part of the solution. Working with the beginning farmers around the state, I see two big barriers. The first one is the lack of access to land and the lack of access to markets. And if you can see, if you don't skip or pass these two barriers, you don't have the ability to have a living or succeed on this kind of hard and risky job. I'm working with farmers on rural communities like Lone Prairie, Wyoming, Minnesota, Waseca, Owatonna, Morris, Minnesota, and I giving this kind of tax credit to the farmers who want to retire. This can be a economical motivation to these farmers to work in directly to the beginning farmers. Try to go on this road. Sometimes try to get the loan for get the land. It's take time. And it's very hard to find a farmer who really wants to work in this process directly with the farmers. And I can see two ways win-win. It's not just a benefit for the farmer who wanna retire. It's gonna be the benefit for have a multicultural community, and it can be for the benefit and wealth of the rural communities. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. And the next person, please welcome to the committee. State your name and provide your testimony.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair and representatives. My name is Aaron Blythe. I also represent Land Stewardship Project and Latino Economic Development Center. Land Stewardship Project has about 4,000 strong members, mostly farmers, mostly rural members throughout the many counties in Minnesota. And the Latino Economic Development Center has been working for over 10 years in many of those counties with Latino growers, Hmong growers, and Somali growers mostly. I can say that I'm here to support the carve-out for the 20% of the beginning farmer tax credit for farmers of color, for women farmers, and for farmers with disabilities. Throughout my time working in the state with farmers of color, I can say that they face many, many barriers. I've worked with many white farmers as well who are beginning farmers. They face many, many barriers. But the barriers of farmers of color is triple or quadruple that due to language, due to economic reasons, and due to systemic racism that has been prevalent in this state in the past and continues today. And so I fully support that there's a carve-out that makes it very explicit that there is money available to those farmers to be able to access land. As my colleague Rodrigo had said, access to land is one of the biggest barriers to an economically viable farm operation. And this is one step that I believe would be very helpful to those farmers. Lastly, I would just like to say that we do live in a very increasingly diverse community. As I've traveled around rural Minnesota, I've seen that diversity. I think some of the reasons we have growing communities in Minnesota is because precisely there's been immigrant populations that have come into those communities. They've helped school districts actually access more money because their children are coming into those communities. And many of those folks want to farm. That's what they know how to do. That's what they love to do. And I think this is one of the important ways that we can help make that a reality for them. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Mr. Lowry.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Stu Lowry, and I'm the incoming Government Relations Director for Minnesota Farmers Union. And I'm a poor substitute for Bruce Miller, who is on the agenda, but it's an honor to be before you today, not only as a representative of Farmers Union, but also as someone who grew up on a small family farm and still has cows there with my dad. So I'll keep this short. You've heard thoughtful testimony on the importance of this legislation, but here on behalf of Minnesota Farmers Union and our members across the state to express our support for these modifications, which will help this important program work better for farmers. Aiding in the transitioning and supporting a diverse group of new and beginning farmers that includes women, people of color, people with disabilities, and indigenous people is so important in that transition and making sure that we have a resilient farm economy and are supporting family farmers into the next generation. So thank you so much, Madam Chair, Representative Lippert, and members of the committee.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Representative Cleaver.
I just have a really quick question. I read a bunch of amendments last night to our bills today, and for some reason I was thinking that there was an author's amendment to this bill. Is there no author's amendment?
Thank you. I do believe that we did have an author's amendment.
I'm so sorry. I don't have it.
I believe it's the eighth one.
Thank you, Representative Cleaver, Madam Chair. I can just quickly explain this author's amendment.
So
this, as we were working with the Department of Agriculture on this bill, they pointed out that we had the dates of October 1st and September 30th in the bill, and it was too close. So we needed more time to be processing these applications. So it changes the date to September 15th and October 1st to give more time to the department to process these applications.
Thank you, Representative Lippert. Thank you, Representative Cleaver. Yes, we did have that in our packets, and just I apologize that I didn't bring it forward earlier for you, Representative Lippert, to be able to address, but as you see it, it's just page 4, line 12, delete 30, and insert 15. So are there any questions about that? It's the author's amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay? Okay, that amendment is adopted. And so then we have the bill as amended before us, House File 1546. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was given this question to ask to testify or the bill author. IRFA loans require participation by private lending institutions. Would they be held to the same standard as the IRFA?
Representative Lippert, or we want somebody from the department, maybe? Or yes,
yeah,
I think
department
we bring down
someone from the department. Come
yes.
Forward.
Good question. So we want to be able to respond to that. Welcome to the committee. State your name and if you heard the question.
I have. Good morning, Madam Chair, members. In answer to your question, Representative Anderson, the tax credit is mutually exclusive from the RFA loans program. The RFA just administers this. So in an event where somebody, say, is purchasing some land and they're using a local bank in the RFA, they don't have to go that route in order to apply for the tax credit.
And in order to give yourself the right authority, could you state your name and your position within the department?
Yes, sorry. Matt McDevitt, Rural Finance Authority, Ag Lending Supervisor.
Thank you. And Representative Anderson.
I think I understood that. One last question. When this was passed back in 2017, there was $5 million a year for this program. Has that money been all used up, or is there money left?
Last year we used $2.3 million approximately, and so then the remaining $2.7 rolled over and went on to this year's amount of $6 million, so there is approximately $8.7 million available this year.
All right, Representative Anderson.
So folks that applied would certainly be eligible because there's sufficient funds in the program for them to qualify, correct?
As it stands, yes, and the money will roll over year to year until sunset.
Thank you. All right. Any other questions? I think I appreciate you coming down, being available to answer that question. I don't know that you have any other testifiers. Anyone in the audience that would like to testify for or against this bill?
I don't.
All right. Seeing none, seeing no other further discussion, it's House File 1546, Representative Lippert.
And just ask for your support. Thank you.
Thank you. And you would renew your motion?
Yes, I renew my motion that House File 1546 be referred to the Tax Committee as amended. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes. House File 1546 as amended be referred. Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay? Motion prevails that the bill is passed and we'll be going to taxes. Just a reminder, our next meeting next week and the next couple of weeks, we are extending the time a bit just to accommodate. Hopefully we get everything done within the time that we have and don't have to do any night or Friday meetings. So I appreciate that. Thanks again. I know that, you know, we're all friends around the table. And so we want to make sure that we continue to, and we have friends in the room, so we want to continue to be able to do that and be respectful of each other. So I appreciate your time today and meeting adjourned.